The Baillieu government today acted on its pre-election promise to enforce tougher laws on bike gangs, similar to those put in place by the South Australian government in 2008 and in New South Wales a couple of years ago. Premier Ted Baillieu says the laws which were introduced into Parliament today will enable the state to ban certain gangs and strip them of assets.
The Supreme Court will be able to make such a declaration whenever it is satisfied that the organisation is engaging in serious criminal activity or that gang members are using the organisation for serious criminal activity. Victorians do not want to see criminal bikie gangs flourishing in this state, and they do not want to tolerate these activities.
So Victorians won't stand for outlaw motorcycle clubs, says the Premier. But when the South Australian and New South Wales governments tried to make stand against bikies in 2009, their laws challenged successfully in the High Court. And a similar appeal against Queensland law is before the High Court as at the moment. As we heard earlier on the show, the Law Institute of Victoria's President Michael Holcroft believes the Baillieu government's proposal will also be challenged.
This legislation, if it goes through unchallenged, could have the effect of making people criminals and liable to a penalty of up to 5 years imprisonment simply because they do choose to be associated with a particular club and wear particular colours. And we just say that that's unfair from a human rights point of view.
Robert Clark is the Victorian Attorney General. He's with me this morning. This afternoon, I do beg your pardon, Mr. Clark. Victorian Attorney General, Mr. Clark, is Mr. Holcroft's views there that this is unfair and also likely to fail? Are those views valid?
Look, it's very disappointing that the LIV leadership has chosen to engage in the sort of baseless conjecture that Mr. Holcroft has been engaging in this afternoon. It's absolutely absurd to suggest that the Supreme Court would make the sort of order that he's talking about. Under our legislation, a bikie gang, other similar gang, people associated with those gangs will only be brought under control orders if the Supreme Court is satisfied on evidence put before it that there is serious criminal activity involved and that the continued activities of the organisation or the individual pose a serious threat to public safety and order. And I'm sure Mr. Holcroft, if he thought about it, would not be suggesting that the Supreme Court would act in the manner that he's alleging.
If bikie gangs are breaking the law, why not arrest them?
Well, of course, those who break the law could be arrested, but what this law is directed at is not simply acting after the event, but acting proactively so that these organisations that use the front of legality, that operate out in the open under a pretext of legality, cannot continue to engage in their activities. Because if the court is satisfied on evidence put before it that they are engaged in serious criminal activity, the court can make orders to prohibit their activities or to restrict the actions of individuals who are behaving illegally.
So does this therefore mean that we now have a principle that says that if somebody has a track record of criminal behaviour, is at liberty at the moment, but is likely to be reoffending, that they too could be imprisoned or their sanctions could be placed against them before they go through a court of law?
What this is based on is the Supreme Court being satisfied on evidence put before it that the gang concerned or gang members are using the organisation for serious criminal activities, that the activities pose an ongoing serious threat to public order and safety. On that basis, the court can make a declaration, and then having made a declaration, the court can make control orders as it sees fit to tackle that criminal activity.
So they don't have to be charged, they don't have to be found guilty, they can just be suspected, and therefore their liberty can be curtailed.
Not suspected. The court has to be satisfied beyond reasonable doubt on evidence put before it that the gang concerned is engaged in serious criminal activity.
I'll go back to my earlier point. If you have evidence beyond reasonable doubt, why not charge them and take them through the courts?
Well, of course you can also charge them. But what the court needs to be satisfied about is that the gang is engaged in serious criminal activity rather than about specific offences. Specific offences can also be charged, but the point I'm making is that these laws can be proactive in stopping these gangs in future. And these gangs have been a serious problem that's been identified by law enforcement agencies around the nation, by the Australian Crime Commission, by police forces, and more is needed to tackle this serious organised criminal activity that uses the front of legality to be a facade for serious criminal activity underneath.
We had the gangland wars a few years ago with people doing assassinations, effectively, on the streets of Melbourne and other parts of Victoria, I think. Would these laws be, could potentially be used, could this model of law be used against those people? So a family who are, for instance, and there was a high-profile family who were reasonably often visited by the Special Operations Group, could they be taken into custody? Could their liberty be curtailed because of a suspicion that they would be, or even beyond reasonable doubt, that they're likely to be involved in criminal activity? We can take them into custody. Is that where we're going here in Victoria?
This law is not based on taking people into custody. It's based on the Supreme Court being satisfied beyond reasonable doubt on evidence put before it that serious criminal activity is being engaged in and the continued activity is a threat to public safety and order. It's taken after the parties concerned have an opportunity to put their case and to be heard. It's targeted primarily at those groups that operate under a facade or a pretext of legal operation, but in fact are being used for serious criminal activity, and it's designed to disrupt and, as far as possible, prevent that activity in the future.
So how do you prevent that activity occurring? So if it's not being taken into custody, what sanction does the Supreme Court visit upon them?
Well, these orders prohibit the activities of the gang. The court, if it sees fit, can prohibit the organisation from continuing to operate at all. It can prohibit the activities of certain members. It can take a range of other measures in between. Breach of those control orders will carry a jail term of up to 5 years. For organisations, it will carry a fine of upwards of $400,000. In addition, assets that are used in committing breaches of control orders will be subject to asset seizure and forfeiture.
Do you have no fear at all that this is a slippery slope? That what we're starting here is very, very different from the system of justice that we're used to in Western democracies?
This is based on evidence put before the court, with the court being satisfied beyond reasonable doubt that serious criminal activity is going on. And this is similar to legislation that was agreed upon by virtually all state and territory attorneys general several years ago. Other jurisdictions have acted. The previous government here in Victoria failed to act. We committed to fill that gap, and that's what we're doing.
Those other attorneys generals have probably had their laws kicked out by now, haven't they?
There have been challenges to laws in South Australia and in New South Wales. Those laws
successful
were framed...
challenges.
Those
successful challenges.
Jared, if you let me...
No, I just to clarify, I'm more than happy to let you go on, Robert Clark, but successful challenges, have those laws been taken off the statute books as a consequence of these challenges?
Well, as a matter of fact, they haven't been taken off the statute books. There were elements of each of those pieces of legislation which are different to the model that we're using in Victoria, which were held to be invalid by the High Court. Each of those jurisdictions has now, as I understand it, acted to remedy those components that were held invalid by the High Court. The vast majority of state and territory attorneys general and of the Commonwealth remain committed to legislation along this model.
I grew up in the United Kingdom, and in the 1970s the British government was taking people before what were called the Diplock courts in Northern Ireland, a state which of course was the subject of what might call a civil war, terrorism, outrageous behaviours. People were taken before courts, and evidence was posted there that said that these people are engaged in terrorist activities, and they were taken into jail. It was a black day in the British justice system. I can't see why this isn't a black day in the Victorian justice system.
Well, I can't comment on the specifics of the Northern Ireland situation. All I can say is this is based on evidence placed before the court. The court needs to be satisfied beyond reasonable doubt that serious criminal activity is involved and that the activities of the organisation pose a serious threat to public order and safety.
I'm still not convinced that you've told me, and more importantly the audience, why, if people are engaged in criminal activity, we aren't charging them with that criminal activity and taking them through the courts.
Well, these aren't either ors. Both options can be followed, but where there is a pattern of sustained, systemic, organised criminal activity, you need to do more than act just one by one after the event against individual proven offences. As I said, these gangs get their power by operating out in the open under a pretext of legality. If you can have that activity stopped, you can tackle this serious component of organised crime.
We'll wait and see what happens at the High Court. Mr. Clark, thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning. Robert Clark, this afternoon, I do beg your pardon. Victorian Attorney General Robert Clark joining us there. Paul Coon is with the Free Australia group. He's the leader of that group and a party spokesman, and he's with me here. Paul, welcome to you.
Yes, good afternoon there.
What are your thoughts on what's happening around this legislation?
Well, look, I'm in South Australia, just so that your listeners are aware of where I'm based. And we've already been down this path with the Serious and Organised Crime Control Act, which has been reenacted in Victoria. Now, the section, Attorney General, I believe, Clark there, was quite correct in the fact that only a section of that act was determined to be invalid in the High Court. In fact, it was the section to do with the control orders, and it was basically a matter of separation of powers under the Constitution where someone was determined to be a criminal without judicial application. So obviously that part got thrown out. Now what they've done is they've corrected that particular little flaw in the law, and they're putting this matter before the Supreme Court of Victoria to make a determination. Now what I'm hearing from your Attorney General there is he's talking about preemptive action, proactive action. He's talking about evidence before the Supreme Court. All of those things sound wonderful to the public, and from a politician's perspective, that's what you've got to do. You've got to sell it to the public. From a legal perspective, look at this, and I would question any of your listeners to accept this concept that when you are charged in court or you are determined to be a criminal in court, you must have the right to cross-examine that evidence that is going to put you in jail. Now, this sort of act and these laws that they've put in Victoria aren't permitting that cross-examination of the evidence that is likely to put someone in jail. This is totally wrong.
It does seem to be a trend across jurisdictions in Australia, though, that these laws are flagged, they are introduced, and they are passed. What do you think is behind this? My sense is that if somebody's breaking the law or is suspected of breaking the law, then the police are very well equipped with lots of other legislation to actually surveil those people and to eventually arrest those people and charge them, and then it goes through the system. What's your sense of what's going on here?
Well, Jared, I think you've actually hit the nail on the head, and I think you've got it by the short and curlies and what you just said then. The fact is, if these people break the law, there are already laws in place. Therefore, one would have to question, why do we need draconian laws given to the police, which in effect will be unaccountable to public scrutiny by the way of cross-examination in court? The nature of these sorts of things requires secret evidence in court, which some of your listeners may recall the concept of Star Chamber back in the 1600s. They were declared illegal because they are an abrogation of law and human rights. But I'm not even going down the human rights path here. I'm going down what's common sense and logical. If there is a problem with crime, and there may well be, one's got to ask, are the police adequately equipped to deal with what they've got before them? By bringing in laws that allow for, shall we say, lazy policing, and this isn't a slight on the police force in any state, but the fact of the matter is this sort of law allows for lazy policing to get convictions, to get people in jail, to get people off the street whom the police deem to be of a certain character or a certain type or wear certain clothing. Whatever that is wrong, because the very simple fact that when you have a Star Chamber or secret evidence, you don't get to cross-examine that. That goes against the rule of law for a start. I think your Law Society person in Victoria, Michael Holcroft, has already said that, that these things go against the rule of law. What you've said is correct, that there are already laws in place to deal with it. Why aren't they using them? Maybe the funding would be better served to give to the police to bolster their criminal intelligence and deal with those things on a one-off per basis.